Well, Ansel, welcome to Learning Through Experience.
Thank you.
Can you say something about what the Broad Center is?
Yes. The Broad Center at the Yale School of Management works to improve outcomes for our K-12 urban school systems around the United States through three pillars of our work. The first pillar is our leadership development programs, where we have both a master's program for emerging leaders and a fellowship program for senior leaders in K-12 school systems. Our second pillar is around research, where we're trying to generate knowledge about what makes school systems effective and convene people to share in that knowledge and use it. And then our third pillar is around policy engagement, again, bringing folks together, policymakers, practitioners, and researchers and faculty to think about how we can improve outcomes for students and communities.
You wound up at Broad. That was your entry in.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
Yeah, I was in a cohort of about 50 people, and I distinctly remember definitely at the first session and probably the first couple ones, even though I'd shown up in part because my job felt lonely and I was looking for sort of peers to connect with and learn from, I also showed up with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, a little bit of skepticism and sort of this feeling of like, I don't need more friends. I have enough friends. Like I need people maybe to talk about work and to like figure out what other places do, but I don't need more friends in my life. And then pretty quickly, I realized that whether I wanted to or not, Broad was going to create this group of people who were going to sort of metaphorically envelop you in a hug, whether you were ready for it or you were ready for it, but you know, whether you thought you wanted it or not, it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then as it did, realizing how much I actually did need and want that, which was a very powerful learning. And, you know, there are folks from my cohort. I went through the program more than a decade ago now, but there are still friends. I have good friends who came from that experience and from the connection that we made together. So that was really powerful learning. And then the second thing that Broad really did, which builds on one of the aspects you were talking about, was this idea of stretching and sort of expanding your range. So Broad has this tradition of sharing your leadership story that we've continued on to today in our programs at SOM, which is this idea that at some point in the program, each person will come forward and share a 10 to 15 minute version of the story of how they've become the leader that they are today. And everybody does it in their own way. There's no right way to do it. But it's no visuals, no props, just sharing your story in some way in front of this group. And I was asked to share my leadership story at our very first session. I was the second person to go. And it was absolutely terrifying. The first person to go in our cohort was Katina Graves, who's actually now the deputy director at the Broad Center. And she, you know, blew the doors off the place. I can't believe you want me to go after this woman. I don't understand. And it was also terrifying because there was a version of my story that I had told before, and it was a safe version. And I knew that I could tell that safe version. But I think some part of me wanted to tell the real version that I'd never shared publicly before. But I was also terrified. And so I went up to the front of the room that morning shaking. Mm-hmm. And I remember to this day that I was talking so quickly that I think people could not even fully keep up with it. And there was a woman in my cohort who was sitting near me, and she just gave me this motion and mouth to me, slow down. Mm. And it helped me just to take a breath and to slow down a little bit as I told this story. But telling my story, the real version was.
Are you going to tell us your leadership story?
Yeah.
Good. Cool. So what is your leadership story? Give it the Broad invitation.
So I grew up in this small town in upstate New York in a family that didn't have a lot of money, but that where my parents cared deeply about education, and I loved going to school. I loved reading and books. I sort of grew up always knowing that I was going to go to college, and it was just a matter of sort of which college I could get into. And my parents had always told me that my job was to focus on school, to focus on my grades and test scores and SATs, and that they would take care of everything else. So I didn't know exactly what that meant, but I knew there were scholarships and financial aid. And so I just did what they said and focused on studying and loved like I said, loved school, had good friends, had just a really good time growing up. And then when I was 16 years old, so a junior in high school, I learned quite suddenly that I was undocumented. Hmm. And my parents had to tell me that the thing that they had always told me, that all I had to worry about were grades and my SAT scores, wasn't actually true, that they weren't going to be able to do the take care of everything else part. Hmm. And so that moment sort of turned my life upside down. And I think beyond the sort of specific worries and fears that came up, not being able to get a driver's license, not being eligible for federal financial aid, not being able to work, not being able to leave the country while our immigration case was in progress. But more so than any of that, the sort of biggest shift was that I went from thinking that all things were possible, that sort of the horizons were open to me, to feeling like I didn't know if anything was possible, feeling the sense of deep uncertainty and not knowing what lay in the future, and that being a terrifying thing instead of like a open and hopeful thing.
Right. Huge life paradigm shift.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was. And, you know, at the same time, especially now with the benefit of hindsight and distance, it's something I'm really actually intensely grateful for, because I trace everything I've done sort of in education back to that moment and back to understanding in a flash. It made clear in a moment sort of how much the individual bootstraps narrative is such a falsehood, like, right. And that it's not fair to tell our kids to perpetuate that falsehood. It can be harmful because when they see the reality sort of that face them. And it doesn't mean, like, I still believe deeply in individual agency. And I think that was sort of the only way that I found out of that sense of hopelessness and fear. But at the same time, there's like a recognition of, I remember having this feeling of like, just anything I did, whatever I could hold up, you know, however many AP test scores and however many academic honors or whatever, it felt like such a flimsy defense against the structural forces that were around me. So I think that feeling of sort of identification and empathy that shaped everything I've done since, to think about then, like, how do we change some of those structural forces? How do we make a different reality possible for our kids?
Yeah. Well, how powerful. And I mean, the kind of gaslighting effect of the bootstrapping story really comes to the fore in what you're talking about. How is your role and the way that you lead now a stance in response to that?
You can feel further and further from the direct experience of kids as you take on these leadership roles, but I've tried to stay rooted in that experience as much as I can. I've tried to really to not lose sight of sort of the importance of the urgency and the magnitude of the changes that we need to create on behalf of our kids and communities, even as I've also learned really important lessons about times when you need to slow down and take a little bit more time to think something through, or to engage with a greater group of stakeholders, or to bring people along with you. But I've learned those lessons and sort of never tried, at least, to never lose sight of the also the urgency that is needed and what we are trying to do on behalf of kids. I think there are times when in K-12, when, you know, there tends to be a pendulum, as there is in many fields, I think, and in our world in general. And sometimes I think there was a pendulum swing, I think, from sort of this fierceness of education reform and people like charging hard and breaking a lot of glass to do it. And then sort of a pendulum swing from that to like, ooh, we like maybe went too far and we need to really like be much more thoughtful about how we listen to communities and not create change that is harmful in the way that we do it. And I think that is an important adjustment, but I also think you can't, in doing that, try to make your work just about like making everybody happy, which can't happen, or just to keep the peace, when actually there are, the status quo is not working for the vast majority of our kids and our communities in large urban school systems like the ones that Broad tries to serve. So we have to, it's not enough to continue to do what we do now. We have to think about how we do that work in a way that is better for the people that we serve.
It's such a rich answer, because your scope simultaneously takes in individual pictures and experiences and keeps the structural intervention and scope in mind. And this kind of, you know, stretch of kind of macro and micro tends to be hard to keep in mind. Like, what do I actually do? And people often want to decide one or the other. And you're naming it as both and.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think it was one of the things I really loved about my work in DC, which was the role I had right before coming to Broad. I served as the state superintendent of education there for 6 years. And, you know, I had learned a ton about what a state education agency does. And I do think there's something about sort of that systems level structural thinking that appeals to how my brain works. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I loved about DC was leading the state education agency there in a place that is sort of state, county, city all in one, meant that even as the state education agency, our work just felt much more direct and was more direct, and the impact of it was felt more closely by individual families and educators and, you know, community organizations and schools. And we heard about that, that direct impact often and sometimes loudly. but it also, it really brought home sort of understanding the impact of the kinds of structural things we might try to do in a different way. And I was really grateful for that sense of being a little bit closer to the ground.
Mm-hmm. And then you came to Yale. When? How long have you been at Yale now?
Let's see, about 3.5 years. November 2020.
Great. And I, you know, I'm really, you know, thrilled for any chance that I have to teach in and interact with you and your staff. I just love what Broad adds to the school. You know, Yale School of Management is, you know, I think a mission-based organization in every way. And yet when Broad entered, I could feel the mission so much more palpably, this educating leaders for business and society. I think for me, the presence of Broad and your inviting me to teach both everyday leadership and more recently the interpersonal and group dynamics course has really profoundly changed my experience in what was already a positive experience. I love the students. I've always loved my students. I love what I do. But the connection to mission, to people who are out there working to, you know, create and change the landscape of urban education just pulls on me so hard. And then your leadership, the staff, the well-run program, and then the participants, it's just like any Broad day is a good day for me. I'm like, this is fantastic. What can I do? How can I help? So, you know, partly we wanted to do this podcast episode because there was this basically new experiment this year in having the senior program, the fellowship, experiment in a course that you haven't done before. I've been doing it for many years, but not in this format, not with Broad, not with the Broad Fellowship. And so we want to talk about it on the podcast. I mean, I'm just going to be transparent, we can include it or not, so that people would have a sense of what they're getting into and why. So can you talk a little bit? I mean, not everything in the Broad teaching spectrum is about everyday leadership and interpersonal group dynamics. This is just a portion of people's experience. But why this interpersonal group dynamics course or experience is really probably the reference.
Yeah. When I think back to the parts of being a system leader in DC that felt the hardest, what I realized over time was it was not just the complexity of the challenge or the newness of it or just like how hard it felt, how hard it was to figure out. Often the hardest parts were the interactions with people, the literal interactions with people, and then sort of what I could feel it raising within me. So I remember, you know, within my first year in the role, I had several tough interactions with different people, different circumstances, but where they were coming at me really hard about something, yelling really in my face. And I remember just literally having a freeze reaction, like feeling paralyzed and not being able to say anything in that moment, and really struggling with that feeling of feeling so shut down. And it took some really, I was lucky that I had an executive coach I was working with who helped me sort of recognize what was happening, helped me think about sort of how to find a different way to move through those moments. Really, the biggest thing was actually she convinced me to start taking yoga. Mm-hmm. And just because she was like, I've noticed that you don't breathe very much. And that I think yoga might help you to move with breath. Which sounded really strange to me at first, but I found to be incredibly helpful. Mm-hmm. And what I would find is that when I did make it to a yoga class and had that chance to sort of move with breath, I would leave the class. I would feel this clarity and this calmness as I left. And I would often find on my walk home that all kinds of ideas would start percolating or like a way to, I would figure out what I wanted to say in response in those moments or figure out, you know, sort of something would shift that had previously felt stuck. And it was sort of that experience was sort of on my mind as I thought about what are the parts of leadership that actually feel the hardest. And it's not actually content typically. Like you as a leader know your own context and the content better than anyone else is going to. So yes, there are content things that could be helpful. There's new stuff that can come up. It's helpful to connect with other people. But the really thorniest parts I found were around sort of those interpersonal interactions and like I said, sort of what it raises within yourself. And so I wanted to think about for our senior level program for the Broad Fellowship, where it is number one seat leaders like superintendents or charter network leaders or state commissioners of education, and then cabinet level leaders who work with them in these big public roles that are can be really challenging, how to help leaders really get to that level, that heart of what I think can feel the hardest in it. And as I learn more, as you know, it's been such a pleasure to work with you. So the admiration is completely mutual. But as I learn more about sort of your teaching, I knew how impactful everyday leadership was for our students and our fellows, and interpersonal and group dynamics felt like it could get at even more intense level that felt like it might be needed for our senior leaders in particular.
Right. So that was the hope and the dream. So when we talked about this a year ago, I was like, are you sure that's what you wanted? This is really hard. It's really hard because, you know, and Broad is such a powerful, positive experience in, I mean, the community aspects that you, you know, initially a little skeptical about valuing, and I think it's transformed your experience of yourself are still very much the heart of Broad, right? It's a very real, palpable, potent, positive community with the dreams and aspirations for its members and for the world. It's really very powerful. I can feel the impact of it on me, and I'm just kind of peripheral. I pop into the room whenever I can because like there's just such great energy. But this the world is not necessarily, and especially in urban schools, are not necessarily exactly like that. And so, you know, I hear part of your aspiration as a dream to bring more of the power of Broad culture into schools. So I was a little bit worried, and maybe I'm still a little bit worried about how to bridge the gap between the powerfully positive felt experience that I think most people have in Broad. I don't have anyone that I've experienced is not saying that in both of the Broad programs that I've had access to, or even going to the alumni forum. And so I think people were worried about, like, if we do something different, it will feel different. And if we do something kind of in the interpersonal dynamics domain that feels real, it might break the magic. It might break the magic. Now, my perspective, you know, I call this work Hope for Humanity. I've been doing this at Yale School of Management for over 20 years. And I came to call it Hope for Humanity because it, you know, Yale School of Management in general also has a positive student culture and experience. And yet the kind of surface way of interacting doesn't necessarily prepare us for the hard moments, for the kind of tough interpersonal dynamics that you referred to. And the reason I call this Hope for Humanity is we tend to go to kind of like sometimes dark places. In other words, there might be conflict or some sense of vulnerability, and the learning is experiential and interpersonal, not just conceptual. And so we're really experiencing that, some of the hard stuff and some of the best stuff. And it very reliably turns to actually we're stronger than we think. We actually can engage, find a way through, and not only recover, but actually recover more powerfully, where we actually trust the process and trust ourselves to be able to navigate deep and sometimes dark and cold waters. And that capacity to trust the process and to trust oneself in a difficult setting leads to a greater robustness. And so groups actually get stronger and leaders get stronger when they can trust themselves. So rather than a kind of brittle fear of like, let's not have a real conversation. It might go south. It's like, okay, this could be a hard conversation. We know we'll make our way through. It's a very different context. So, but getting from where Broad is now to really the belief in the process is a change and a lift that is part of the reason that we're talking today. So you not only wanted this program, you were willing to put yourself in the room because I was kind of like, you know, Hansel, I think we have to like, we got to do the thing. And so you were a participant when we ran through, it was about a month ago. What do you want to say about what you have learned through experience in doing this work?
Yeah, I was both really looking forward to and very nervous about being a participant. And in part, I knew that one of the hardest things for me personally was going to be fully engaging as a participant and not trying to take off my hat as the executive director of the Broad Center and sort of feeling responsible for everybody's sort of experience in the intensive and in our program as a whole, and instead try to just be there as an individual person and to just take ownership for my own experience, which I think was very powerful in and of itself as a sort of meta experience of the whole thing for me. And as you said, I think there are bumpy things that we are learning about how to take this thing, this really wonderful learning experience that you have created for many years in other settings and how to sort of apply it within our own setting. And I think there are, you know, adjustments that we are thinking about making, both as our, you know, first group comes back together for their final session in June, but also as we continue this kind of work in the future. And at the same time, I think I think about this both for me as an individual, but also for the program as a whole, the importance of being able to sort of keep this spirit of it is not only okay, but important to continue to push ourselves, to take risks and to try and get better and to not just rely on this, as you said, to this culture and the kind of connection that we create is such an important part of Broad. But the connection I think is it's because it helps us to be better in the work that we do. We're not just sort of like bringing people together for the sake of connecting. We're doing it because we know how important that connection is as we seek to be the best versions of ourselves, the best leaders we can be for our kids and communities. And that means we have that means being able to work through hard conversations with each other and being able to push and challenge each other. Part of how I think about this is like any one of us as individuals is obviously human and fallible in all the ways, no matter how good our intentions are. But there is a power in collective genius and sort of thinking then not about like each, yes, trying to become better as individuals, but also thinking about how we can rely on sort of the collective to help us with our blind spots, to help push our thinking, to help check us when we are missing something, to help us correct when we've made a mistake, which is, you know, really hard to do. And, you know, I think one of the things I'm really aware of in general, as we think about leaders, but also in particular with this experience is vulnerability is hard, I think, in any setting. But vulnerability in a public leadership setting is really challenging. Right. Because you know, too often from experience, the ways in which people may use that against you, the things that you disclose and share. And I think that sense of like not wanting to go there is so real, so understandable. I've definitely been there myself. And I think what I learned for myself, at least, is that there is no other way to lead through it other than to continue to open yourself to connection, which then requires that level of vulnerability. And you can be strategic about it. You can think about sort of when and where and how. So it doesn't mean, you know, 100% to everybody in every setting, but it is to guard against that, I think, has too many downsides ultimately for trying to be for the work that we want to do.
Yeah. But I want to thank you for coming on Learning Through Experience. It's completely delightful to talk with you here and to work with you in general.
So lovely to talk to you. Thanks for having me.